We've got this series that we're in with the Apostle Paul, where Paul is standing in opposition to what is going on around him, and he's setting the example for us so that we as well can stand in the face of opposition. So by now you should be in Acts 21, 22. We're going to be in those two chapters, so you might want to be able to flip. We're in week two, so I need to catch you up in case you weren't here for week one, or if you have forgotten, that's okay. I want to give you a pop quiz where I give you all of the answers because I'm just that great of a guy. You with me? Okay, great. Two of you are with me. The rest of you have a pop quiz and there will be graded. You will not leave until you get all the answers right. That'll teach you for not talking back, okay? Okay, some of you are still not with me. All right, we're going to try. Oh, forget it. Paul is in Jerusalem, way down here in the bottom right. He ministered in the town of Ephesus, and in Acts 21, it was called Asia. And he had a following in Asia by a guy named Trophimus. Trophimus came down from Ephesus around the sea, the Mediterranean Sea, to Jerusalem to worship with Paul. There were guys that came from Asia, or Ephesus in particular, saw Paul with Trophimus in the city of Jerusalem, and then they saw Paul in the temple, and they said, oh, therefore, the Gentile Trophimus went into the temple, and we have a problem with that. It's just the whole thing was based upon assumptions. So to refresh your memory, the right arrow on the far right, the Gentile courtyard, is as far as the Gentiles were allowed to go. If a Gentile went into the gates of the beautiful gate, called the gate called Beautiful, went into the temple, the Romans would allow the Jewish people to execute them without a trial because they were unclean people coming into a religious or clean environment. You see, the blue arrow was the women's courtyard. The orange arrow would be where Paul would have been. The Jewish people went in and they got Paul and they drug him out by the scruff of his neck, and there was the riot. Last week we started with a riot around Paul. And Paul was drug out of the temple area into the Gentile courtyard, and then the Roman guards had to carry him from the courtyard of the Gentiles to their barracks. So just to refresh your memory, to help you understand, this red circle is where all of chapter 22 that we talked about last week happened. This big courtyard around here is where the Gentile courtyard would have been. The yellow arrow would have been where the barracks are. And then the red arrow on the far right is where Acts 22 is going to take place. So I need to fill you in on the story before we get to the message. So if you turn in your Bibles to Acts 21, starting in verse 37, Paul is brought to the barracks, which is where the yellow arrow is. That is because there is a riot in the temple area. And remember, the Roman guards have one objective: to keep the peace. You will keep the peace in the Roman guard either by your own submission, or they will keep the peace by the sword. Either way is fine with them, but you will behave. So they have this rebel rouser in Paul that has been drugged from the temple in the red circle, and they carried him, literally carried him, from the red circle to the barracks. And if you will, Acts 22, verses 1 through 20, the Roman guards are saying, my goodness, what is happening? So Paul says, hold on a second, hold on. Let me talk to the crowd. The Roman guards say, interesting. Because Paul is talking to the Roman guards in their dialect of Greek. And so they know Paul is a learned and educated man. Paul says, let me talk to the crowd. So he talks to the crowd in their native tongue of Aramaic, and a hush falls over the crowd. Isn't it interesting? Just previous verses, there was such a riot, they're ready to kill Paul. Now, Paul has gone from the barracks into the yellow line, into this red area out over this temple gate. And this crowd has gathered to watch this riot. And a hush falls over the crowd as he begins to speak to them in their native tongue. Paul says, I'm a Jew. And let me tell you my story about my life that has been changed by Christ. If you want to cross-reference, it's Acts chapter 9. Paul says, I was a Jew of Jews. I was the Pharisee of Pharisees. I was part of the stoning of Stephen. My job, my mission, I thought that I was doing by God's will was to persecute people of the way. The way is the knowledge of Christ, the Christian movement. And Paul was on the road to Damascus, and Paul tells this crowd, and there's a hush over the crowd, that I heard a voice from heaven. And it said to me, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It was Jesus. And from that point on, Saul's life, who we now know as Paul, was radically changed by Jesus. And he goes on to tell his testimony, hey, I was blind, I went and I found Ananias, he went and he healed me. And then from there on, I've been on mission for Jesus Christ. And the crowd was just as quiet as you are this morning until verse 21 of Acts 22. And Paul said, I've been on mission for Jesus. My mission for Jesus has been, as he told me in verse 21, go, I will send you far away to the Gentiles. The crowd is reignited in their anger for Paul. Don't miss it, right? I challenge you, go back and read the first 21 verses, and there is a pin that could drop, and you could hear as Paul talks about his life that is changed by Christ. And it's all going well until he talks about the gospel needs to go to the Gentiles. And this Jewish crowd that is gathered here for one purpose, that purpose is to kill Paul, has been quiet. Now, the riot that was at 10 has now been notched up to 30. And the people are angry. And you could see the Roman guards. It's almost like whenever you have conflict in your own life and you have this disagreement between two kids or two people and people are upset and they're on level 10 and you come in, okay, let's talk about this. What do you feel? Okay, you feel that way. Okay, great. What do you feel? I feel this way. Well, I feel this way. And then all of a sudden there's a peace in the argument. Are you with me this morning? And then someone says, yeah, but you said that. And all of a sudden that argument comes back up. And it's even higher than it was before. That's where the Roman guards are going, I don't understand what just happened. Well, that's going to set the context for Acts 22, starting in verse 22. I want to take four action points. I want to show you these points. I want to build my message on these points, and I want to show you them again at the end when they make more sense as we walk through the passage. The four action steps I want us to walk out with, first and foremost, is that trust in God's timing, trust in God's plans. Oftentimes, we want to know the whole story when God only gives us a sentence at a time. I want to know what my fourth step is before I take my first step. And usually, God doesn't tell us the whole thing. He tells us one step at a time. Because if he told us the whole plan, then friends, we wouldn't need faith. But always trust in God's plans because God has a plan. Sometimes his plans are not my plans, but God always has a perfect plan. Second one we're going to see from Paul is when you disagree, you can be respectful. You can respectfully disagree with what people say and yet not be rude about it. You can agree to disagree but not be disagreeable. We're going to see that in the life of Paul as he demonstrates that for us starting in verse 25. When you get the chance, when someone gives you a platform, when someone gives you an opportunity, we should talk about our life that has been changed by Christ. And finally, fourthly, we need to demonstrate genuine love. Because sometimes when we have conflict, when we come against people that just rub us the wrong way, we just want to write them off. But we're going to see by Paul's example, he doesn't write them off. He shows them genuine love. That genuine love is to speak the truth, not in a rude way, but in a way that is loving, but also truthful. So let's go. We're in Acts chapter 22, starting in verse 22. So they're listening to Paul's testimony. They're listening to Paul's talking about his life that has been radically changed by Christ. And up to this statement, what statement is that? Verse 21 tells us they were fine and they were with him until he talked about the Gentiles. The Jewish people have a problem with the Gentiles because the Gentiles don't follow the Old Testament as the Jewish people do, their dietary laws. The Jewish people say to be a true Jew and to follow Christ, you need to follow the Old Testament. And Paul's saying that's not true. You need to follow Christ. If you want to follow the dietary laws, that's okay, but that's not necessary for salvation. And that's where the Jews disagree from the Gentiles. So the Jewish people, remember, they're over here outside the gate. They're so upset that they raise their voices and say, away with such a fellow from this earth. What they're saying is, he's got to go. We have to kill him. And let's just step back for a second because we know how the story ends. Just think of the Roman guards. Remember, what's their one objective? Their one objective is to keep the peace. So they have this angry mob that is within the temple. They grab this guy by the scruff of his neck, drag him through the temple. They carry him from the temple to the barracks. They get him from the barracks, put him outside, and all of a sudden the crowd is fine. Until Paul, this guy, says, hey, the Gentiles need to know too. Rah! And the Romans are going, I don't understand what happened. I have no earthly idea. I can't figure this out. What is going on? But now the crowd has gone from 0 to 10, back to 0. Now they're at 30, and now they're saying he shouldn't be allowed to live. And they want to put action with that. As they were crying out, they were throwing off their cloaks. They wore robes. It's almost like today, we want to go out and play football. I'll be quarterback. Well, I'll be a whole lot better quarterback if I don't have to wear my big, puffy winter jacket because I'll be able to get more sling for the ball. So the Pharisees and the religious leaders, they're taking off their cloaks so that they can grab stones to throw them at Paul to be able to kill him. That's their one objective. And they're so angry, they're throwing dust in the air as a form of grief and a form of anger. They're so mad. And here come the Romans going, I don't know what just happened, but we just lost control. What was peaceful, and if you will, a public meeting where this guy is speaking in their native tongue, has just turned violent. Dust is in the air. Cloaks are coming off. Stones are being grabbed. Uh-oh, we got to get him out of here. So they take him. The commander ordered Paul to be brought back into the barracks. So they went from that soil and dirt, they brought him back into the barracks. Why? Because they have to get control of the situation and keep the peace. And look at this crowd going, wait a second. It's everybody versus one. We don't understand what this guy is saying. Literally, because it's in Aramaic, they might have been able to catch some words. But religiously, with spiritually, they're not singing the song that Paul is singing because they don't know Christ. They don't know about the lives that have been changed by Christ. All they see is a crowd that's quiet. Now they're at level 30, ready to stone Paul. So they bring him back into barracks, stating, hey, we should examine him by flogging. We can't figure out what's going on, so what we're going to do is we're going to beat it out of him. We're literally going to beat it out of this guy. Because, generally speaking, most people will not endure pain. They'll just tell you what you need to know to stop the pain. So a scourging or a flogging is, there is a wooden handle, and then there are ropes or leather that is somehow tied to that wooden handle. And then embedded into that leather is pieces of bone, pottery, glass, rock, that they would fling upon the back of someone, and it would get a hold of them, and it would take the chunks and it would rip it out of their body. The only purpose of flogging was to set an example for the next person. Don't do what they did or you're going to be here. So we'll just flog him. We will beat him until he tells us why everybody's upset, so that we might find out the reason that this crowd went from 0 to 10, back down to 0, and now they're at 30. This guy has done something. I'll beat it out of him until he tells us. That's pretty much how the Romans rolled. So they went and they brought Paul. And they stretched him out with thongs. They took pieces of rope. And I can't prove that this is how they did it, but I think they did it in a public square. I think they found two columns, and they somehow got the rope, and they tied Paul to the Roman columns. And they wanted to do it in public to set an example. We will set a public example of this rebel rouser so that people won't follow in his steps. We'll make an example. So they stretched him out with rope, and Paul is stretched. He is literally stretched between these columns. And they have a commander there, which is, or a centurion who is over 100 guys. First of all, those guys are there to help keep the peace. Second of all, what are they looking for from Paul? They're looking for a confession. So they have someone close enough to Paul that as he's going through this torture, that he is able to either call out or whisper, stop. I'll just tell you what you need to know. So Paul is tied between these two columns with a crowd of people around. You know who has front row seats? Are the religious leaders that hate him so much. And the Roman guards are there because their one objective is what? It's not to find the truth. It's to keep the peace. So Paul is strung between these columns, between these arches. I don't know if it was two or four, but he is stretched. The cloaks are gone. His back is exposed. Some commentators say the back of his legs would be exposed as well. And they will beat on him. They will flog him with this rope until he tells them what they need to know or until he dies. So Paul said to the centurion, tied. Notice this, tied. If you're waiting till the last minute, Paul, if you're waiting till the very last minute, bud, I think you're at the last second. If a natural reading of Acts 22, that whip is in his hand, he's tied up, ready to go. The crowd is assembled. They're ready to take that first thrashing to Paul, and notice what Paul says. Paul says to the centurion who was standing by, he says, is it lawful for you to scourge a man who is a Roman and uncondemned? First time we read from Acts 21 through Acts 22 that Paul has used his Roman citizenship. Paul didn't walk into the temple. Your homework this afternoon is to go back and read Acts 21 and Acts 22. Did Paul walk through the temple saying, you can't touch me, I'm a Roman citizen? Paul never abused his citizenship. Paul never went around and said, I can do this because I'm a Roman citizen. It was only until the very last moments before he would endure terribly painful abuse, torture, that he turned around, tied up to the centurion, and said, hey, excuse me, I'm a Roman citizen. Is it lawful for you to beat me, flog me, as a Roman citizen when I haven't even had a trial? In today's world, you know what Paul would have said? He would have said, I need a lawyer. If you ever get in trouble and you don't know what to do, you just call and say, I need a lawyer. That's really what Paul has said. But Paul doesn't have a lawyer yet. Paul has his Roman citizenship. And so he therefore looks at a centurion and says, hey, Roman citizen, where's my trial? I haven't been accused of anything. I haven't had a trial to find me guilty, and I'm a citizen. The centurion who heard this, he quickly went to the commander who was the guy over the whole thing. We're going to meet him in 2 weeks, his name. The commander, and he told the commander, saying, what you're about to do, it's really, really bad. This is a bad idea because this guy that we have strung up in the column on the pillars, he's a Roman citizen. You see, because to flog a Roman citizen is illegal. I could have you turn to Acts chapter 16, verse 37. That's the Roman due process if you want to do a little more study. Acts 16, starting in verse 37. You have to have a trial, and even if you do, you're not allowed to be flogged as a Roman citizen. It's illegal. If the commander would have done this, you want to know what happened to the commander? He would have been flogged. He would have been the ones that would have had the flogging to him because he mistreated a Roman citizen. So the guy, the centurion, comes up to the commander and goes, really, really bad idea. You need to stop this. Really, you need to stop this. And so the commander, he comes to Paul. Hey, time out. You can almost hear the crowd go, oh. I don't know if he put the whip down. I can't prove that. But he goes, stop. He comes up to Paul and says, tell me, are you a Roman citizen? Now, Paul could have, quote, lied about it, which he didn't. I'll prove that in a minute. But if you would lie about being a Roman citizen, you're only prolonging the inevitable. You're only going to cause yourself more harm and more pain. So you might as well not lie about it. So if Paul is trying to get a fair trial or to stop what's going to happen or to wait for the due process, there is no due process if you're not a Roman citizen. So the commander comes up to Paul. Remember, what's Paul? Paul's strapped up, ready for flogging. Hey, I'm a Roman citizen. Where's my trial? Are you a Roman citizen? Yeah, I'm a Roman citizen. It's confirmed. I'm a Roman citizen. So the commander turned to Paul and said, hey, Paul, I'm a Roman citizen too. I acquired my citizenship, but it was with a large sum of money. I bought my citizenship. There's three ways to become a Roman citizen. The first way is that you demonstrate loyalty to the kingdom of Rome. And that could be you lived on the outskirts and you gave home or aid to the Roman government or the army. And that word got back to the commander, and they said, because you have shown loyalty, we will reward you. Here is your citizenship. It's our token to say thank you. Second one could be is you could buy your citizenship with a large sum of money. That is a year's worth of wages that you pay to the local government to grease the wheels to be able to become a Roman citizen. So this commander, he bought his citizenship with a year's worth of salary to grease the wheels. Oh, here you go. You dropped this $5,000 bill. Oh, funny. You dropped your citizenship. Oh, I'm so glad we ran into each other. That's how they became a citizen. The third way is born. That you're born a Roman citizen. And that was Paul. Who would have thought that when Paul's mom and Paul's dad got married and came together and had Paul, that he was going to be born a Roman citizen? And 30, 40, 50 years later, here comes Paul, strung up, ready to be flogged, and says, I'm a Roman citizen. I didn't buy it. I was born it. And that is the strongest citizenship that you can have. Notice God's timing. I would challenge you, mark that, that God had a plan when Paul was first born. And that plan wasn't fully known until this very moment. Therefore, those who were about to examine him, I hope that you find the humor in this. This is the New American Standard way of trying to say, whoops. They're not looking to examine Paul. They're looking to beat a confession out of him. I found that hilarious when I read this. Because they're not looking to examine him. They're looking to beat him in order that they figure out what this rebel guy is trying to do. So those who were about to examine him, they let go of him. They cut the ropes. They undid the knots. They couldn't get him out fast enough. Because to try to flog a Roman citizen without a trial, it's really, really, really bad news. In our world in America, that's like you having a trial without a lawyer, without a court system, and you just being found guilty. It's that bad. So immediately they let go of him, and the commander was afraid because the commander goes, uh-oh, I almost flogged a Roman citizen without a trial, and I can't flog a Roman citizen. If I do that, he's going to be the one that's strung up and flogged. So he is really sweating it out when they found out that Paul was a Roman because they put him in chains. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? Turn back one page to Acts chapter 21, starting in verse 11. We talked about this last week. Agabus's prophecy, remember? Paul, if you go to Jerusalem, you're going to be bound. Your hands are going to be put into chains. So here we see another instance of Agabus's prophecy coming to fruition, that Paul's hands will be in chains, that they will stretch him out, and Agabus's prophecy is fulfilled and confirmed again. Another cross-reference. God's timing is perfect. And Paul says, I need to go to Jerusalem to talk about and to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Verse 30, but on the next day, so day has passed. Love to go. There's so much here that if the good Lord would allow me when I get to heaven, I want to sit down next to Paul and tell me, and I want him to say, okay, here's everything else we didn't put in. How was that conversation with the Romans when he went back into the barracks? What conversation did the Pharisees have going, you can't let him go, you can't let him go? Night has fallen. On the next day, wishing to know for certain why he had been accused by the Jews. Remember this Roman commander? Let's not forget him in this narrative of Paul. What's his one job? The Roman commander has one objective: keep the peace. And the Roman commander had a crowd in the temple. Complete chaos. Crowd moves outside to this red arrow. Complete calm. Everybody's just listening. This guy, he comes and says, wait a second. He says a word, and now this is all a big chaos again. He knows it's not Roman. He knows that the guy can't be tried in the Roman court because he's a Roman citizen. Second of all, there's a mistaken identity. The commander thinks Paul is the assassin from Egypt that is in charge of bringing this rebellion against Rome. So they can't wait to flog this guy, and now they're going, I don't understand what the problem is with this guy named Paul. He's not who we think he was. He's not this assassin from Egypt. We find that in Acts 22, the beginning of the chapter, where they think Paul is this rebel rouser. All Paul is, quote unquote, all Paul is he's a teacher that's talking about this guy named Jesus. And the Roman centurions, the commander, he's sitting there going, I get the rebel, but yet I don't understand all of that. There's a missing piece. And I wonder if that's anybody here this morning. That you look at this and you say, I don't understand what this church thing is about. I get the coffee and donuts. I'm all about that. I get the fellowship. I like people. I like when people say hi. But I'm not here. I don't understand why people are standing and singing, in Christ alone, my hope is found. He is my light, my strength, and my song. And maybe someone invited you to come to church and they promised you a donut and coffee, or they promised you a meal after, and you're going, I just don't understand. You're a lot like the Roman centurion and the commander going, there's got to be more to the story. What's the rest of the story? This commander, he's hooked. Who is this guy? And maybe you're in the same boat and you're saying, who is this Jesus? And what did he do? It's a great opportunity for you to lean in and to learn. Because this commander, we're going to be able to follow him in Acts 23, Acts 24, Acts 25, to be able to hear the rest of his story. So the commander, he comes and he's curious to know why they're accusing Paul. So he released Paul, because Paul's not this assassin they thought he was. He's not this rebel rouser against Rome. He's just this rabbi, this teacher that the Jewish people want to see killed. So they ordered the chief priests and the council, which are the Pharisees and the Sadducees, to come together. Rome says, hey, very simple, we're done. He's not a Roman problem. He can't be flogged because he's a Roman citizen. He's not the assassin we thought he was. We're out, but we're kind of curious about what's going on. Hey, it's a religious thing. You religious leaders, you Pharisees and you Sadducees, you all come together and you figure it out. You tell us what this guy's done wrong. And they brought Paul down and they set him before him. Here you go. We're out. But let us know what goes on because we're curious. If you will, he's your problem. You deal with him. He's a Roman citizen. I'm not touching him with a 10-foot pole. We almost did a really bad thing and flogged him. We're out. So now Paul, he is now in Jerusalem before the council. So we have these action points, the same ones I showed you at the beginning of the message. The first one, trust in God's timing, trust in God's plan. Long, long ago, far, far away, Paul was born a Roman citizen. God had a plan. It didn't make sense to Paul until Acts 9 with the road to Damascus, but God was using the steps of Paul for such a time as this. Second of all, when you disagree, Paul disagreed with the treatment he was receiving. I'm not looking to be funny. I'm looking to be serious here. I would too if I was flogged. But I want to reiterate, Paul did not walk around the temple saying, I'm a Roman citizen. Paul did not poke the Jews. Paul did not go and specifically stir the nest saying, you can't touch me, I'm a Roman citizen. Paul was in the temple ministering and finishing that Nazarite vow for 30 days. When all of a sudden, grabbed by the scruff of neck, drug out, and now he's lost his freedoms. And Paul is being hung in that Roman archway, and I can't think of anything other to say, excuse me, Mr. Centurion, I'm a Roman citizen, where's my trial? Oh, Paul didn't berate the Romans. He wasn't disrespectful to the Romans. He simply said, I agree to disagree with you, but I'm not being disagreeable. Lately, there has been a lot of political talk in our state and in our country. And we disagree with some of the things our legislator, our representatives are doing. I wonder how it would rock their world if we would call them and say, hey, I just want to let you know I respect you fully, but I just want to let you know I disagree with where you're standing and how you're representing me. And I'm not looking for a fight to berate you or to belittle you or to use some language that shouldn't come out of a Christian's mouth. I just want to let you know that I really respectfully disagree in some of the ways that you've been voting. I wonder what that would do to them. First of all, they'd look at the phone and they'd say, wow, it's actually a pleasant phone call where two people disagree, but they're being civil to one another. Paul's standing there in ropes, ready to have his life taken from him by a whip. And he says, excuse me, I disagree with this. Where's my trial? It's a great lesson to learn. Paul always talked about his life that was changed by Christ. That's your homework in Acts 22, verses 21 through 1 through 21. Paul looked at the crowd, the very crowd that wanted to kill him in the temple. He talked to them in Aramaic, and he demonstrated genuine love, and he told them about the gospel. Friends, our world doesn't need more division. Our world needs to hear about the lives that are changed by Christ. And what better people to go out and spread that story than the people whose lives have been changed by Christ? We don't need more division. We don't need more people yelling. We need more people talking about, I once was lost, but now I'm found. It's what Paul did. Excuse me. I just want to go back. I want to go back. Excuse me. I'm a Roman citizen and I haven't had my trial. Oh, immediate boom, 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 boom. That boy was free. And he did it respectfully. And then he never, ever, ever missed an opportunity to talk about his life that was radically changed by Jesus. Four action steps. Last time, here we go. Trust in God's timing. Let's be, when we disagree, let's be respectful. Talk about our life that's changed by Christ. And number four, demonstrate genuine love. The love that we have that comes from God himself. Let's close our time in a word of prayer. This morning I want to pray for two groups of people. I'm going to ask for feedback if you so desire and want prayer. My goal is not to call you out. It's not to have you come forward. It's just a chance to pray for you. First group of people I want to pray for is those that are like the Roman commander. You have no idea what's going on. You have a lot of questions about this man named Jesus, and someone invited you to church, and you don't understand it all, but all you really do know is that you've missed a piece of the puzzle, and that piece is Jesus. And maybe after hearing this message, you have questions. To level the playing field, we all have questions. But the difference is some found out the answers. So is there anybody here I can pray for this morning as you are on this road to Jesus and you have questions? Can I pray for you that you would have the boldness to have these questions asked and then answered? Can I pray for anybody this morning? Is there anybody here that has questions? Second group I want to pray for is those that are like Paul, that would say, you know, my life has been changed by Christ. I now need to be able to stand in boldness and talk about my life that was changed by Christ. Tom, would you pray for me that when I have the opportunity, I would take that bold step and share about my life that's changed by Christ? Is there anybody I could pray for this morning? I see those six hands come up. Lord, I'm so thankful for your word. Thankful for the example of the Apostle Paul, who, to his own credit, if you will, he sacrificed his freedom knowing that he would face opposition. And he did that to to further the gospel because he wanted to demonstrate a genuine love for people that wanted to kill him. So Lord, I pray for those that are in the building, those that are online, that may have questions. Lord, I pray for them that they would have the courage or the boldness to seek out answers to those questions. That they're like this Roman guard, this commander going, I don't understand, but boy, I'd like to know what happens. Lord, give them a boldness to come and find those answers. And the answers are found in the person and the work of Jesus, who gave his life so that we can have life everlasting. Lord, for those of us that our lives have been changed by Christ, pray, Lord, that you might give us that boldness to go out and share the good news. The world doesn't need more division. The world needs Jesus who can save. So give us that boldness and that courage to go out and talk about our lives that have been radically changed by Jesus. So Lord, give us that boldness, give us that strength, give us that courage as we leave this building. It's in the name of Jesus that I pray. Amen.